Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Operation Confidence Radio Talk Show, America's Invisible Heroes, with Consuela Mackey, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to America's Invisible Heroes, a show dedicated to our veterans and their families. Yes, I'm your host, Consuela Mackey, Executive Director of a grassroots nonprofit organization called Operation Confidence. For those who may be new to the show, American Invisible Heroes strives to provide a platform for veterans to be able to share their experiences, heartfelt stories, resources, challenges, and accomplishments. Now, I would like to introduce you to my wonderful co-host, Air Force veteran and Operation Confidence board member, Matt Davison, U.S. Army Reserve and board member, Charles Whitehead, and board member and member of our team, and also Brooke Gadaski, announcer, and Carol Siegel, who's responsible for Carol's Corner. Good afternoon to you all.
Good afternoon, Connie, Charles, Brooke, and Carol.
Good afternoon, Connie, Matt, Brooke, and Carol.
Good afternoon, Connie, Matt, Charles, and Carol.
Good afternoon, Connie, Matt, Charles, Brooke, and welcome, LA Talk Radio listeners.
Well, March 1st was the start of the International Women's Month, and March 8th was International Women's Day. So to kick off this extraordinary and especially important time in American history, we would like to acknowledge another outstanding American female service member. Brooke, would you do us the honor?
Absolutely, Connie. Betty Wall Strofus was born November 15th, 1919 in Faribault, Minnesota, and attended school there, graduating from high school in 1938. Betty then worked at the Faribault Courthouse for several years, then later had her first flight in an airplane in 1942. She then joined the local Civil Air Patrol in early 1943, and volunteered for the newly formed Women's American Service Pilots, which performed wartime duties in the U.S., relieving male pilots for overseas combat assignments. Of the original 1,800 women accepted for the new program, just 1,074 finished the rigorous training at Avenger Field, Texas, and graduated in early 1944. Betty was one of them. After receiving her wings, Betty was stationed at Las Vegas Army Airfield, Nevada, where she regularly flew several different types of aircraft, including AT-6 trainers and P-39 Aero Cobras, and co-piloted larger multi-engine planes such as B-17 Flying Fortresses and B-26 Marauders. Betty did gunnery training, towing targets over gunnery ranges, and performed in-flight instrument training for male pilots. Her military career ended on 20th December 1944 with the military's decision to deactivate the WASP program. She briefly returned to Faribault before moving to Kansas City to complete a Federal Aviation Administration course, qualifying her as an aircraft communicator. Betty worked at this job in several locations until 1947, when she returned to Faribault, married, and raised five children. She worked several part-time jobs from the 1960s to the 1980s. Beginning in the mid-1990s, Betty devoted much energy to sharing her story at hundreds of organizations around the United States. Activities included a multitude of veterans and aviation organizations, the co-authoring of several books about her experiences, including Love at First Flight, written in 1944, Wingtip to Wingtip, written in the year 2000, and her election in 2000 to the Minnesota Aviation Hall of Fame. Betty passed away on March 6, 2016, at the age of 96.
Wow. That's amazing. Matt?
Yeah, today I recently got a message from Disabled American Veterans, or DAV, about legislation for women veterans. Women veterans face a unique set of challenges associated with their military service that elevates their risk for developing substance use or disorders. Post-traumatic stress disorder, often due to military sexual trauma, is one such issue. Women who identify as LGBTQ also have an increased risk of developing substance abuse in association with family instability, homelessness, decreased worker productivity, and declining health. Substance use disorder also increases the risk for suicidal behavior in veterans, especially in women. Additionally, the health impact of substance use and withdrawal is different for women than are those for men, as are their reasons for both using substances and stopping or reducing their substance use. Understanding these differences is important to effective care. H.R. 344, the Women's Veterans Trust Act, Residential Utilizing Support and Treatment Act, would require the Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs to conduct a nationwide study of the need of women-specific programs to treat and rehabilitate women veterans with drug and alcohol dependency. Following the analysis, the VA secretary would be required to select at least three VA networks to carry out a pilot program to treat and rehabilitate women veterans with drug and alcohol dependency. The DAVA resolution number 093 supports improvement of VA substance use disorder programs for veterans with mental health and substance abuse disorder conditions. And DAV resolution number 020 supports improvement of VA programs and services for women to quality treatment and specialized services. Based on these resolutions, the DAV strongly supports this bill. Please contact your representative to request that they co-sponsor and support the passage of H.R. 344, the Women Veterans Trust Act. And DAV, thanks you for your support. And for more information on how to learn more about this subject or to contact your HR representative, call 202-544-3501. That's 202-544-3501. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. As always, you always have such wonderful and amazing and informative information. Now, Brooke, would you please introduce our first guest speaker for today?
Absolutely. I am delighted and honored to introduce our first guest today, James Gerald Henniger, Air Force Vietnam Era DAV, American Legion, Vietnam Veterans of America, 48 and AMVET memorabilia. He is the chairman, CEO of the Veterans Memorial of America, the Henniger Museum, Veterans Food Bank of America, and the Hollywood Wall of Fame, a division of the Henniger Family Museum, Inc. The Henniger Family Museum, Inc., DBA, as Henniger's Memories and Nostalgia mission is to preserve historic items for the general public to view and strive to fill the void in Southern Indiana and the Midwest by providing a history-based national collection. They also strive to assist local people in seeing how their local history relates to our national history. Furthermore, they strive to present the history in such a way as to make the museum an interesting and attractive to visitors of all age groups. In addition, the Henninger Family Museum, Inc. has and is establishing the National Veterans Memorial to honor all our country's veterans with a national memorial. Please join me in welcoming Air Force veteran James Gerald Henninger.
Hello.
Hi, James.
Hello, James.
Hello. Yeah, you're really read. You read the whole thing this time.
Well, we're happy to have you back on the show again, James. You have such a wonderful program for our veterans. Please tell us about it.
Okay. Yes. A lot of people, when they hear Henninger Family Museum Inc., they kind of get confused. That is just the 501c corporate name. We kind of set it up like General Motors. And since my family helped get it started, that's why it's kind of got the family name into it. But it's not what a lot of people think. And because what we try to do is have different divisions with the memorial, the museum, and the museum had to have a separate name, different than Veterans Memorial of America, because the museum is geared to also be like a retreat for veterans and their families, as well as Gold Star families across the nation, to come and have a relaxing place to visit that's just not all military, so they can pull back and remember good times in their lives. And that's why we brought in the Hollywood Wall of Fame, because everybody likes the old movies they grew up watching. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of there. And then the food bank, we're just really still struggling to get it up and going bigger, so we cover a bigger territory, even though we're already working in part of three states. Even though we're just started at the end of last year, we ended up handing out 81,033 items.
Really?
And we feel like we're just getting started with that, the veterans and their families in the area.
Wow.
And we figure we got to go about 10 times bigger than that. Yeah. Right now, we're in the midst of a $1.3 million expansion project. Getting started with it because we want to build a new 6,400 square foot warehouse to help feed more veterans and their families.
Hmm.
And something that happened at the end, towards the end of last year, we were contacted to bring, and this one will be brand new, not a used one, but bring a large Vietnam wall here to be permanently placed with the memorial, as well as what they call the Cost of Freedom, which in turn incorporates World War II, Afghanistan wars, 9/11, different time periods throughout on that. And so we're right now, like I said, trying to get that moving. And I tell people, this project is not just for the Midwest. This is for our country's veterans and their families and Gold Star families. And we're placing names from all over the country. We've been contacted. We've been contacted as far as veterans' families from England, and the U.S. territories have contacted us by phone. So we've been getting calls from all over the country. We've actually even had 18 Hollywood celebrities visit our operation, too, in past years.
Wow.
So
who were they?
Johnny Crawford, Johnny Crawford was one of them, and he served during Vietnam. And right now his health is in pretty bad shape. But he was able to make it several years ago. We've had Lana Turner, which is one of the James Bond girls here. You know, we've had about 20 Hollywood celebrities here. It'd take a long time to mention everybody and everything. But as a matter of fact, because of what we're doing here, not only the Hollywood Wall of Fame, but we have been donated about 350 autographed items from Hollywood celebrities and recording artists for people to come and enjoy.
Wow.
And so it's that. And one of the things that we've been pushing again real hard recently with the memorial is to try to get every veteran in the country to step up and mail us a copy, their written story, what it was like to be active duty military, their stories, whether they had a desk job or whatever. We need these stories to archive and complete a true story of all that we can, so those stories never disappear. I know, like, the government has done somewhat of that, but, you know, a lot of times they censor stuff, and we don't want to do that. We want the public to really know what it's like to be in the military. And so we've been collecting stories from around the whole country from veterans, and that's starting to pick up a little bit again. Gold Star families have been sending us the stories of their fallen soldier, what a little bit like for them to be in the service. One of the worst things that I hate seeing here, though, is we've had a hard time getting the women veterans working with us to be sure they are have their place here, too, and not be such a small percentage of the operation. We have no ladies' uniforms still. We have very little other information military-wise that we can exhibit. And we've only had about two of the lady veterans out of the stories we've had to have their stories placed in our archives.
Oh, my, that's important.
So I bring that up again because, to me, it's a very important thing that everybody be recognized here, not a certain group or whatever.
That's right. Our women veterans are very important.
That's so right. Go ahead.
Hopefully that the women veterans who are watching this, listening to this today, will get in touch with you.
Yeah, so I thought the same thing, Matt.
We're going to need your...
We'll
need your contact information.
Yeah, well, our phone number, again, is 812-795-2230. That's not a cell phone. That is an office phone. So you got to leave your phone number when you leave a message because it does not, we don't have the fancier phones here. You still got to leave your phone number. And then our website is, of course, veteransmemorialofamerica.org. And veteransfoodbankofamerica.org. And why we went with the, because of the memorial's name, we kind of went with the food bank, stating it, Veterans Food Bank of America. But eventually we would like to get everybody pulling together and making this a major food bank for veterans on a national level one day. And so we've got a lot of plans. And this is a multi-million dollar project, but just think what we could do on a national level if everybody in the country just donated a dollar per person in the family.
That's true.
Yeah, I have background that's a lot different than most people. I've dealt with theme parks. I've built stuff for the National Park Service. I have an architectural degree, even though I was a medic in the Air Force during Vietnam. I grew up in a family of construction. As a matter of fact, my family helped build the original arches for McDonald's. They had to be made out of wood before they could have the big arch to be made out of metal. I said that as a little kid in the 1950s. So I'm trying to give this a little bit of a theme park feel. If we can get everybody in a national destination for everybody. So, you know, it's going to take a lot of help to get it to the size I would like to see it, because we want to try to grow some food on property in the summertime here. Since we're in Indiana, we can't grow year round. But we also want to give it to where it's a recreation area for disabled veterans. So we've got a lot of plans, but it's going to take a lot of unification and support. And that's what this whole project is.
Well, James, that's some outstanding information. Can you repeat your contact information again, please?
Okay. Phone number is 812-795-2230. That's 812-795-2230. And then the websites are veteransmemorialofamerica.org and veteransfoodbankofamerica.org. Now, on the memorial site, we just updated it and did some remodeling. So you can read, go on to the website and read some of the stories of the veterans and fallen soldiers that we have archived here.
That's wonderful.
Eventually, Matt, all of them that come in.
Did you have any questions for James before we move on?
Yeah, I just wanted to know if, James, if you're getting any assistance on the Veterans Food Bank.
We've got a sponsor that's back east that her son died while active duty. I can't remember if he was killed in action or not right off the top of my head. But she is working with us. She started a nonprofit after her son died while active duty, and she's helping us. Then we have Lewis Bakery, which is Bunny Bread, who is donating a couple of hundred loaves of bread every month. We get more as we grow, but I'm not greedy. Mm-hmm. I don't try to take more than what we can use at this time.
That's right.
But it's been really hard. When we go around here and talk, say, hey, we're wanting to do this for veterans, hey, you're just doing it for veterans. It's not, you know what I'm saying? It's not for kids or something like that. I'm seeing a lot of discrimination. You want to really bring it out to it with this whole situation here. Some don't even want the memorial to have the Vietnam Wall here.
Wow.
Because it's taking away money from them.
That's sad. Well, James, we're going to ask you to come back and really elaborate on what you were just saying just there. That's important information. But we got other guests and we got the comments.
I know you got other guests, but I want to say one last thing. We really would like to see veterans across the country and their families and Gold Star families. Unification is very important, and doing something for those people and keep the politics where they should be.
Well, you have to come back and feel free to come back on a regular basis and share that information.
Anytime you've all contacted me to come back on, since you all learned about us, this is our second time. I've tried to be here for it.
Oh, that's great. We'll make sure we have you back on a regular basis. That's very important on what you're sharing. Okay.
I will let you all go and get to the next person, and we'll talk another time.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, James.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, James.
Brooke.
Bye.
Would you please introduce our next guest speaker?
You got it, Connie. I would like to turn this segment over to board member Charles Whitehead, who will introduce his brother, First Sergeant Frederick Whitehead. Take it away, Charles.
All right, thank you, Brooke. Yes, my brother, First Sergeant Frederick Whitehead, joined the Army in June 1983 and enlisted as combat engineer as a private first class E3 because of 3 years of junior ROTC at Allen Leroy Locke High School in Los Angeles. He served in every leadership position from team leader to battalion command sergeant major, served as U.S. weapons instructor, drill sergeant, sapper, office basic course instructor, sergeant major for Arkansas Youth Challenge, military advisor for the Afghan National Army, and now videographer for the Joint Readiness Training Center at Fort Polk, Louisiana. Combat tours was also included Desert Shield, Desert Storm, Bosnia, Operation Iraqi Freedom, where he received the Bronze Star, and Operation Afghani Freedom. First Sergeant Whitehead is married to Yolanda. He has 4 children and an 8-year-old grandson. He's a musician with the Leesville Gospel Band and at New Birth Baptist Church, where he plays bass guitar. So,
welcome, Frederick.
Hey, all right, can y'all hear me?
Yeah, we hear you well.
Just a little side note, you know, he doesn't like people to notice, but in the family, we call him Peter. So, but we're going to refer to him as Frederick. I think he said, no, just call me Frederick. So,
hey, just call me anything as long as you call me for dinner.
All right. Now. All right. First off, Peter. No, I mean, see, I naturally is Peter. So I'm
saying. Hey, it's all good, bro. You can call me Peter, man.
All right. Tell us what you did to consult the Afghan Army.
I was a military advisor. I developed the Afghan National Army's drill sergeant program, which called the Master Skills Instructors Course. I started it in 2009 and started from the ground up. One of the things that enabled me to do it when I came over there as a drill sergeant advisor, I learned how to speak the language, Dari, and I got fluent in it. So I was working for a company called Military Professional Resources Incorporated, and went over there, and I was embedded in an Afghan camp on in Kabul, Afghanistan, on Camp Alamo. And so every day I went out and basically developed the program, taught them how to be more professional Army as far as teaching-wise. Now, not trying to get them to do like the U.S. Army did, you know, because I was a drill sergeant instructor in the U.S. Army. That means I worked at the school where we trained sergeants to be drill sergeants. I was a senior drill sergeant there. So one of the things that enabled us in Afghanistan, like I say, I went to a lot of different camps all over the country. I had a beard. I grew a long beard, mixed in with the populace. So that way, a lot of times I get stopped at checkpoints as I'm riding with my, I rode in a soft skin vehicle, blend in with the local nationals, and they stopped me right there. They say, Kajumidi, my name is Farid Buro Dulurman. They say, Saistas, Askuzas is Inmoros. I say, Sais, Moskines Inmoros. And they say, Buro. That means, you know, go. They tell me what I said was, they stopped me and asked me, who am I? Where am I going? And I tell them, you know, what my name is. They call me Farid. Over there, that was my Afghan name because it makes kind of sound like Frederick. And then I tell them I'm a military advisor with the Afghan Army and Darulaman. And they say, oh, that's very good. Thank you for helping our country. And they just let me go. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. So, yeah. A kid from L.A., I speak four languages.
Wow.
And I learned them all, on my own, you know, through the military. I did 24 years. So
what are the other languages that you speak?
German, Spanish, English, and Dari.
That's so great.
I got a question.
Yes.
Frederick, on all of your awards, I noticed the Bronze Star. Now, that's a pretty high commendation.
Yes.
Would you mind sharing how you awarded the Bronze Star?
Yeah, so the combat actions when I was in Iraq, I was a first sergeant in Iraq in 2000, and this was in 2005 to 2006. Yeah, it's just one of the actions as when I had a convoy and stuff going out, and we was putting up berms in Baghdad to try to separate the different factions that was fighting in Iraq, and we came under sniper fire. So with all the sniper fire that we came under and everything, and being able to bring my soldiers back and stuff, return fire, clear, get them back, and without having, you know, like no injuries and stuff. So, and that's one of the things where we get the combat action badge. But then later on, I did get injured over there in an accident, though. I busted the back of my head open and got medevaced to Longstool. Yeah, well, I got a TBI, traumatic brain injury and stuff. But... Yeah, and they told me I need to go ahead and call it a day. But what I did, I forged some paperwork. It's too late now. They can't do nothing to me, you know, because I don't like leaving my soldiers there. So I forged some paperwork, jumped on a MAC flight, flew to Kuwait, and then had some of my frat brothers give me a flight to Baghdad. So I went back to Baghdad and joined the unit. And Colonel was like, what are you doing here? And I showed him the paperwork. He's like, okay, first sergeant, you good. So my goal was to get there and bring all my soldiers home, but it's coincidentally, I wasn't able to do that. I lost three soldiers over there.
Wow.
You know, I can remember when he had that little accident, he was mad that he had to be in the hospital. He was like, I didn't come here to would sit around. I came here to fight, represent my country. He was hot about that, you know?
Yeah.
Here's the thing I want you to tell us. When he was in Iraq and they had all those oil fires.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about what in the broad daylight. Tell us how that was over there.
Once Saddam had sent the Republican Guards, I was with the 40th Engineers, the 12th Engineers out of Dexheim, Germany, which we was part of the 8th Infantry Division, but we was attached to the 3rd Armored Division. And we spearheaded an assault behind the 2nd ACR. And once we got to the oil fields, Saddam sent the Republican Guards to destroy the oil so they could eliminate the money, you know, for the U.S. But we lived inside the oil fields for about 40 days, and the sky was like totally black during the day. It was so bad that every night you had to blow your nose and your lungs to get the black soot out of your nose and everything. And our weapons were just covered with the oil, the soot. You had to clean it every night, and we had to put like our blankets, our ponchos and stuff over the 50 cal machine gun so that way it'd be operational, because we didn't know if the Republican Guards, you know, that we had defeated, they all went back to Baghdad. We didn't know if they was going to come back down and attack or whatever. But living there for that long, you started eating and you had to kind of cover your food or take it inside the APC. That's the Armored Personnel Carrier. I was in a mechanized unit in order to eat. But that after 30, 40, I think it was like almost 40 days of living in the oil field. And then we finally seen the sunlight. It was like, you know, oh, thank you, Jesus.
Okay, so and then another thing. Let's go from the military part. Tell us how you start playing bass guitar, and playing for your church band. Because you know he's a musician like I am. You know, so give us a little quick background on that before we wrap this up.
Yeah. One day I just went to me and my wife went to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and we was visiting some of her relatives, and I seen a bass guitar at a pawn shop, and I said, well, shoot, I want to learn how to play the guitar. And so my wife was like, I'm going to go ahead and get it for you, honey. So she got it, and I ain't know nothing about playing that doggone guitar. And I had a battle buddy when I was a drill sergeant. He played any guitar you could name. He had about 50 of them in his garage. So he taught me a couple of the basic chords and stuff. And then from that point all the way until before I went to Afghanistan as a military advisor, I was just picking at it, kind of learning. Sounded like straight garbage, but you know, hey, that's how it is when you're learning. But I didn't get frustrated. But when I got to Afghanistan, Sergeant Major Goodwin, that's his name, and Warren also retired Clyde Skimmerhorn, they had a little, you get to the little place and just play a little something. And so I started just picking at it. And Sergeant Major Goodwin, he looked at me, he said, Fred, that's what he called me. He said, Fred, by God, I think you got something. So from that point on, they taught me the chords. And then after that, it was like a light coming in open. And so from there, I just started playing every day, so many hours. And then we started rehearsing. And then we put together a MWR band. That's a morale, welfare, and recreation band, where we played for the soldiers, the sailors, the airmen, you know, Marines, different countries in Afghanistan. And from that point, I just started playing. I started getting better and better. And then when I came back, I, you know, learned how to read music, and they helped out. And so from there, I got to the church, and I was like, oh, man, I'm ready to play in the church now. And they start playing some church music, which is not written. It's just craziness. And then from there, I was like, oh, and I got to start all over again. So from there, I started playing with my cousin that's down here. He played the keyboards. And it's a totally different animal playing gospel music versus written cover music. Like Charles Band plays original. They do original music. So I was in a cover band. And so that's the difference. But with the gospel music, I just started playing. And yeah, I had some good mentors, Josh Jones and Roy Mosby and Cedric Clemens. And from there, one day I just walked in there and all of a sudden I could hear the chords. And wow. Then, yeah, it was crazy. It's like, you know, now I can play with anybody, any music, anything. All I need you to do is, if you say we got rehearsal, just tell me what the song is, or just let me hear 4 notes, and I can back it up.
All right, now.
Well, you know what? We're going to have you to come back on the show, Frederick. I love your storytelling. That's just You got to come back and be a part of our team as well. You see that we can connect anywhere in the United States, some parts of the world. And I love how you tell those great stories. So please come back and share with us. A lot of our listeners don't know what our veterans go through while in the military. And the fact that you speak those languages, that's just incredible.
I still work with the soldiers today. As a matter of fact, I just came out the woods with the soldiers now. And I had a Russian head, have my wife help me set this up. I mean, I can go out there and I can set up and I brief the commanders and before they go to Afghanistan, Syria, Iraq, different places and stuff. I can do all that, but setting up a phone, you can forget it.
Well, we're going to eventually be on LA Live. I'm sorry, on LA Talk Radio, Facebook Live. And we're going to let you come back on and maybe film something when you're out in the field and just make it exciting. Okay. You got to come back.
I'll do a break dance, a 55-year-old break dance.
Listen, I have to move on because we're running out of time. But I would like to introduce Carol from Carol's Corner. Carol, can you come on and share your segment about military moms don't always get a hero's welcome home?
I sure can. Thank you, Connie. This is about military moms. They don't really get a hero's welcome home. In 2015, Dr. Marion Henry was deployed for 6 months with the United States Navy as the Director for Surgical Services on the USNS Mercy. It was particularly difficult for her because she missed the first day of school for her three children, 8-year-old Jack, 6-year-old Maggie, and 3-year-old Catherine. She said to meet the children's teachers, not getting to know their friends and their friends' parents. She said when she came home in October, she really felt disoriented. Dr. Henry came home following her second deployment on her daughter Catherine's 4th birthday. Within the military community, this type of sacrifice is normal. Parents serving on active duty are aware that deployment is part of their job. They will be missing birthdays, kindergarten graduation, tooth fairy duties, and many other milestones in their children's lives. Outside of the military community, these sacrifices are seen as annual when they're made by hero dads. But moms, that's a different story. They don't always enjoy that kind of admiration. Some people comment, how could a mother choose to leave her children? Sometimes even while meeting acquaintances will ask mothers that same question. In response to this story about a little boy rushing into his mother's arms as she returned from deployment with her National Guard unit in Afghanistan, one woman made a comment on Facebook, shame on her for leaving her child. Another one wrote, if she wanted to be a hero, she never should have had children. Instead of getting a heroine's welcome, many military moms are ashamed upon returning from deployment because of a double standard. It's not a choice, said Henry, who separated from the military as a commander in the Medical Corps in October of 2017. She now works as an associate professor of surgery and pediatrics at the University of Arizona in Tucson and as surgeon-in-chief at Banner Diamond Children's Hospital nearby. No matter what your job is in the military, you will not progress or succeed unless you deploy, she said. To some extent, working moms can't win, whether they are in military or not. Dr. Marion Henry noted that recently, a mom friend of hers, who is a surgeon and who was asked by her son's elementary school teacher whether her son might behave better in school if she worked less. That's ludicrous, she said. No one sees. There is definitely a double standard for working men, or knowing women as opposed to working men. And that's very unfortunate, because women do just as good a job as men in a lot of places.
Got that right, Carol. Thank you so much. Carol is on once a month with some enlightening stories, and thank you so much for this information. Now, Charles, can you share with us about hot news?
All right, now, hot news. I'd like to tell you about the Heroes Warehouse, who provides previously homeless veterans and their families with furniture and home essentials for their permanent homes at no cost to them. To date, Heroes Warehouse, a nonprofit 501c3, has assisted more than 5,600 veteran families in San Bernardino and Riverside counties. As a nonprofit, 100% of all donations benefit our veterans. We have no paid, they have no paid staff, and all volunteers. They're all volunteers. They accept new and gently used household items such as couches, love seats, tables and chairs, coffee and end tables, lamps, dishes, and other household goods. Due to COVID-19, Heroes Warehouse is not able to accept mattresses, large appliances, or clothing. For pickup and service, contact Heroes Warehouse at 909-714-2640. That's Heroes Warehouse at 909-714-2640. And their email address is heroeswarehouse@gmail.com. That's Heroes, H-E-R-O-E-S, O-E-S, W-A-R-E, House, H-O-U-S-E, heroeswarehouse@gmail.com. Your tax-deductible donations can also be made by visiting their website, heroeswarehouse.org, or mail to P.O. Box 311-202, Fontana, California, 92331. And that's a nonprofit tax ID number of 81-137-2885. Brooke?
Thank you.
Now it's time to hand it back over to Matt so that he can help us acknowledge a special American invisible hero.
Hey, today, I want to share two brief poems. The first one is written by a veteran who is midway through his PTSD treatment program. And it's called Guilt-Free Prayer. If it please God, may my friends forgive me my mistakes, mostly unintended. If it please God, may the world forgive me my interruptions to the flow, my combative honesty, my angry outburst, mostly unintended. If it please God, may I write from my heart, sing with my soul, accept praise, criticism, mostly without judgment. The second poem is called 1969. He lost his limbs and soul in Vietnam so many years ago. Painful thoughts were his daily mayday. His mind fought them day by day. At 5 a.m. today, he took his own life away, having been turned away again by the VA. And those are the two poems.
That is so, so touching. Matt, you got a little bit more information to share with us. Can you tell us about the spirit of acknowledging the International Women's Day?
Yes, and in the spirit of International Women's Day, we're going to talk about new tactics to push for the vote. Sometimes being polite just didn't work. American activists for women's suffrage were coming to the conclusion that decades of quiet appeals for reason and logic had failed to move the needle for their cause. Fresh strategies were required. A new generation of determined women nationwide stood eager to adopt the dramatic, even confrontational tactics that men employed in their own battles for power and influence. Abandoning demure and dignified lobbying, these new suffragists embraced controversy and courted publicity to appeal directly to the public. No tactic was off limits. Parades and pageants, suffrage hikes from New York to Washington, suffrage trains, and even suffrage barge on the Mississippi. Women threw bottles containing suffrage messages into the sea and threw votes for women leaflets out of biplanes. They undertook hunger strikes in jail, then publicized what it felt like to be forcibly fed. Their renewed campaign pulled no punches, either in ambition or creativity.
Wow, Matt, that's incredible. Hats off to all women and for helping to change the nation and the world to be a better place to live. Now, Brooke.
Before Ms. Connie closes, I'd like to remind our listeners about our amazing advertisement rates. We have 10-second and 30-second advertisement slots available. Please email info@operationconfidence.org for more information. The email address again is info@operationconfidence.org.
Thank you. And Charles, you wanted to say a little bit more about your brother. We got a couple more seconds. I wanted to thank him and also James for coming on to the show today with all that great information for our listeners.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, my brother is, you know, he's very comical. You know, we have a bunch of comedians in the family. You know, this is a little bit from the serious side, you know. That's why he's talking about what he did to the baby and all that. You know, we are a lot of jokers, and it comes from my mother and my father, I believe. You know, we all kind of have that. It runs through the family. So, Frederick, you know, you're still there, right?
Yeah, I'm right here, Cat Daddy.
You know?
He's so funny.
Look here, right now I got my wife in here cooking me some fried chicken now.
Okay.
So that's the thing about the service people, they always eat good. So, you know.
Yeah.
He's in Louisiana, you know, and then they were just bad weather where they cook one. And oh, the thing, he's a diehard Laker fan, you know. When he was in Afghanistan, he had a fantasy basketball team called the Afghan Lakers.
Well, that's cute.
Still got them, and they're in first place.
Okay. That's cute. James, are you still on?
Looks like James is gone. So
he's gone. Okay. Well, we got to get to his museum as well, but we got to have you back, Frederick, with your comics and all your great information. And tell your wife we said hi.
All right. She's right here. She said hello. Yes, sir.
She right there.
Yeah, that's my baby right there.
That's your baby. Okay.
That's my baby. 22 years.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wait, you have a great brother.
Look how beautiful she is.
Hi, honey. Yes. You got to come on and tell us about how it was being the wife and had kids from a veteran. I can imagine what you went through while he was gone.
It was rough. It was very rough.
Yeah, well, we want to hear from family members and how they had to deal with their husbands or wives while they were in service. So we want you to come back as well, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, appreciate y'all. All right.
Okay, thank you.
And all right.
We're about to close out today and want to thank our guests for coming on and of course our hosts. And as always, we want to remind our listeners about the goals of Operation Confidence. Our mission is to provide stable housing with a wide range of supportive services, including employment opportunities for disabled veterans and those who may have experienced homelessness. So if anyone out there in radio land would like to get involved with our grassroots mission, please contact us at info@operationconfidence.org. That's info@operationconfidence.org. And visit our website at www.operationconfidence.org. This is the conclusion of the show today. Make sure you tune in next week. And thank you all for listening. And say goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Everybody.
Goodbye.
All right.
Thank you.
Who's up there?
You're listening to Operation Confidence Radio Talk Show, America's Invisible Heroes, with Consuela Mackey, only on LA Talk Radio.